On Digital Learning Day, we celebrate great teaching and innovative learning opportunities powered by technology. St. Paul High School is using technology to support dual enrollment programs that allow high school students to earn college credits for free. Baltimore Public Schools are working towards providing more than 100,000 students with a device to support personalized learning. What will you do on Digital Learning Day? Register your event today by visiting digitallearningday.org.
Hello, and thank you for joining us on the 6th Annual Digital Learning Day, a nationwide celebration highlighting great teaching and demonstrating how technology can improve student learning outcomes. I'm Bob Wise, President of the Alliance for Excellent Education and former Governor of West Virginia. When the Alliance for Excellent Education started Digital Learning Day in 2012, the idea of technology in the classroom on a widespread basis was just beginning to gain ground. While there were a handful of digital innovators in many schools and districts, there were far more that asked students to check their devices at the classroom door or power them down when they got to their seats. Today, that situation is reversed. Increasingly, the norm for schools is to provide students with devices and explore ways to power up and personalize student learning. We'll hear about a few of those places during today's webinar. We'll also learn about one of the biggest challenges still facing many districts, schools, and classrooms around the country: the lack of high-speed internet connections. We'll hear about a federal program that is working to connect 99% of classrooms and libraries nationwide, and we'll dive into how districts can access these federal funds. We'll also offer practical information at the building and classroom levels for superintendents, principals, teachers, and librarians. Of course, we also want to hear from you, our viewers, on what you're seeing and doing in your schools and classrooms. Yes, today, but hopefully every day. After all, we celebrate Digital Learning Day today, but we really want every day to be a digital learning experience for our students. Without further ado, I'll turn it over to Philip Lovell, the Alliance's Vice President of Policy Development and Government Relations, who will serve as our moderator. Philip?
Thanks, Governor Wise. To our viewers, happy Digital Learning Day. I'm Philip Lovell, Vice President for Policy, Development, and Government Relations at the Alliance for Excellent Education. We're pleased at this annual grassroots event celebrating how great teachers can utilize technology to help improve and personalize learning for students continues to grow. As you can see, there are more than 1,700 local events on the Digital Learning Day map. Throughout the country, teachers have created excellent digital activities, including Skype chats with mystery guests, coding exercises, group science projects with digital tools, and so much more. I want to zoom into the map a little bit and spotlight a few of the events that are going on around the country. In Winchester, Virginia, students are figuring out how to use digital tools to reduce paper consumption. Murray Park Elementary School in Wisconsin is teaching map skills through Google's virtual field trips. Community Consolidated School District 62 in DePlain, Illinois, is doing a Take a Risk Challenge, encouraging its students and teachers to connect with experts through a video chat, make a class video, or join its innovation book club. And down in Texas, Harlingen Consolidated Independent School District, they're holding over 50 Digital Learning Day events. You can see photos and videos of many more events by visiting the Digital Learning Day Twitter handle at @officialDLDay or by searching for the #DLDay hashtag. The Alliance for Excellent Education is an education nonprofit advocacy and policy organization dedicated to graduating all students from high school with the skills and knowledge they'll need to succeed in today's modern world. Providing all students, especially those who have been traditionally underserved, with equitable access to technology and high-speed broadband is paramount to the success of our mission. Since the Alliance for Excellent Education started Digital Learning Day in 2012, the importance of connecting students to important digital tools available through the internet has been one of our main areas of focus. Today's topic is particularly important as discussions around broadband are increasing, thanks in part to better policy and additional funding from federal programs that help schools, libraries, and low-income families connect to the internet. There's also been some uncertainty regarding the future of these programs as the nation transitions to a new administration. We'll discuss some of these important items near the end of the webinar. But first, we want to hear from practitioners about how they are using technology to personalize and improve student learning in their schools, classrooms, and libraries. Joining us via Skype is Dr. Harrison Goodwin, superintendent of the Chesterfield County Schools in South Carolina. Joining us via phone is Shannon McClintock-Miller, a teacher librarian and technology integration specialist who is a spokesperson for both Project Connect and for Future Ready Librarians, a project conducted within the Alliance for Excellent Education's Future Ready School Initiatives. And here with me in the studio is Kristen Johnson, a veteran fifth grade teacher at Hawthorne Elementary School in Baltimore, Maryland. But before we get to today's panel, I want to thank all of you across the nation for tuning in and for participating in Digital Learning Day 2017. For those of you on Twitter, you can tweet about the webinar and ask questions of our panelists using the hashtag DLDay. I'll also remind you that you can submit questions using the box below the screen. We'll turn to questions from our audience throughout the webinar. Now, let's get to the discussion. Why don't we start with our teacher here, Christian. So you have been in the classroom for 15 years. So you were here in the classroom when Google was a project in a garage, and you were a teacher when Mark Zuckerberg was in grade school. So you've seen the classroom before technology was everywhere, and today. Tell us a bit how things have changed from when you first started teaching to today.
Well, it definitely has helped with transition. It has cut down on the downtime that can take place in a classroom. Technology has enhanced how we deliver instruction to personalize it for students. We can pinpoint exactly what a student needs and make sure that that student gets the instruction for them that personalizes the education, but also helps to bridge a gap between their learning so that they can be on track with the rest of their classmates. It's very important for students to have meaningful learning experiences, and technology is definitely assisted in the process of making sure that all learning activities and experiences are meaningful.
That's, you know, you touched on the point of personalization, and that's something that's very important to the Alliance and I think to really to all educators. Can you talk to us about how you've used technology specifically to personalize instruction more effectively?
Sure. So one of the things that we do is, as all good teachers do, we do skills assessment to see where a student is. We've been doing that since I was teaching before 15 years ago, and that's a process that has not changed. What has changed is now, because of technology, after pinpointing where a student is in a particular skill, I'm able to form fit a lesson, a mini lesson, just for that student, and then I'm able to send it to that student through technology, and I'm able to build and continue the process of giving different activities just for that particular skill. Now, once that student gets what he or she needs, then I can pull that student back into a whole group and teach a different skill. Now, tomorrow that student might not need the skill that is being taught, so he or she may be with me in that whole group, while I may push in with another student, and maybe I have two or three students that need some assistance with a particular skill. But whatever it is, I am now able to target, dig down, and really get into what that particular student needs and give that student all of the instruction based on that without having to take time away from other students because they're now all on their own skills. So I'm more of a facilitator mm-hmm. instead of a lecturer, basically.
Great. And tell us how you've been able to use technology to get responses from kids in the classroom who might otherwise be a little bit shy in raising their hand.
Oh, that's wonderful. One of the things that I use, I don't know if any of you out there are familiar with it, but I use a program, an online site called Padlet.com. And on Padlet, I'm able to give questions, prompts, warm-ups, and students are able to give their responses through their device, and I can display it on my smart board. So that student that may not be, may be fearful of sharing their answer out loud, we can still read their answer and discuss it. And you find that there are a lot of students who aren't very vocal, but they have a lot of good, great insight to what the discussion is, and they're still able to share. Now, some students may not be that good at writing, so they're also able to videotape themselves if they would like to share that way, and I can play their video for students to see. And it also works well with parents because I can tell parents to go to this same website and see all the great work that your child is doing in real time. So it actually really makes it makes the environment a much more working environment. Students are all on task, students are all focused, and students are all engaged in it and involved and excited about the process. Each day something new is going to happen.
So tell us about how important the internet is to your use of technology in the classroom.
It is vital to the success of the entire program in Baltimore County, especially because we use technology, we use the internet for everything. We use it for just doing our attendance. We need to have internet connection just to take daily attendance. It is vital to the program because all of our lessons that we plan, it has technology is a heavy part of the entire process. So when the technology, it doesn't happen very often, but you know, it does happen. If the technology, if the internet is down for 10 or 15 minutes, that can cause a whole hiccup in the entire program, that can cause a hiccup in the entire program because we have form-fit so much of our lessons and our energy into what we do because the technology helps us to work smarter and not necessarily harder. We can dig down in a much faster rate to get what we need. So when the internet is down, it can really damage everything that we're trying to do.
So since you're dependent on the internet in your classroom, how do you address the issue? Do you have the issue of when students go home to do homework, do they have access online so they can continue their learning at home?
No, some students do, and it's not something that we have any control over as educators. So when it comes to homework, then we end up going back to paper. Which is not a bad thing, but it would help if all students had internet access and we knew for sure they had internet access, because then we could definitely send even more activities. And not only that, it would make the interaction because even more meaningful, because students could then communicate to me through the technology, and I could give them more insight. I could actually have like a homework hotline through the internet if I knew that all students had that. And we could, just like when you take online classes, we would be able to set up times where we could all meet up in our classrooms and maybe go over the homework together. And that would actually help everyone. It would help parents as well, because sometimes parents don't necessarily understand some of the homework that's given. So that would just make me more accessible to the students as well if all students had access. And then parents could ask me questions right then and there.
Great. Well, I've got one final question for you, and then we'll turn to the superintendent. Talk to us about how technology in the classroom and in your school building has helped to improve professional development and has helped to make the art of teaching more effective. You mentioned that that with technology you can work smarter, not just harder. Talk to us a bit about that.
Oh wow! So as I've shared with you before, we have some students. We have teams of teachers, and sometimes we get together and we plan. When I first started teaching, that used to happen where we might be at the school until 10 o'clock at night, to be honest. Or sometimes we would get together on the weekends at someone's house and sit around and plan together. Where now with technology, we can use online platforms like OneNote, where we can create a document in a cloud and we can all add to it at whenever we get a thought. And then we can come back together on a Monday or a Tuesday and say, hey, did you check on the plan that we started to work on together? For example, in language arts, we're all teaching in the same skills at that time. So we pretty much write our lessons together. And so then we can actually come together that way instead of spending as much time in the school building. We can put what we need, and it can be a moving document that we're able to enhance throughout the year.
Great, great. So thank you very much, and we will turn back to you as the program continues. So I'm going to turn now to Dr. Goodwin from South Carolina. And again, before we get to talking deep about connectivity, can you tell us a little bit about your school district, where you're located, and how many students you serve?
Well, we're Southeast Charlotte, just across the South Carolina line. We're a very large geographic county, but rather small enrollment-wise. We've got about 7,300 students, actually very spread out due to the fact that we have a large amount of federal and state-held lands in the middle of our county. So we actually serve 16 different school sites. And on top of that, we're about 82% poverty index. So we're a high poverty rural school district in the state of South Carolina.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So, yeah, so you are large in geography, not necessarily large in terms of students in the student body, but I know large in terms of impact. And one of the ways that you've been able to have these positive outcomes for your kids, I know, is through the use of technology. So let's take a quick trip down memory lane here. And when you were first starting as superintendent, tell us about some of the challenges that you faced in terms of connectivity and technology.
When I came in 2012, there had not been a significant technology upgrade since 2003, when we had a large bond issuance and building program. So not only did we not have Wi-Fi and connectivity for our schools, we actually didn't even have the backbone and capability of putting it in. So we began sort of scheming just to see if there was any way we could afford it. And to be honest, we treaded water just for the first few years, just trying to figure out what the next steps would be. Sometimes you just get lucky in life, and we attended the first Future Ready Summit, and actually during that discussion, the E-Rate 2 discussion came out, which we then have directly benefited from.
Excellent. So tell us a bit about how you're using technology in your school district, and what results have you seen as a result of the use of technology, either in student engagement, student achievement, teacher attitudes. Tell us what the impacts are.
Well, obviously, we're pretty early in the full infusion of technology because we had to get the backbone back in, you know, back up to speed and in place. But it certainly has helped us in delivering instruction to students, and is allowing us to deliver instruction in different ways, as you were just discussing earlier. You know, when you are a rural district, your course offerings are very limited. Now we've been able to open things up for our students across the county to be able to take courses at our area technical college, you know, via distance learning. Full interactive distance learning, which we were not capable of doing before. Not only that, but our state has moved to an online testing platform, and we've been able to meet all of those requirements very early on. So it's really jump-started the things that we've been doing.
Excellent. And let's expand a little bit about this, especially since you have such a large district, and since such a large percentage of the students that you serve are from low-income families. It's clear that you've done a lot to address connectivity when students are in school, but similar to the question that I had asked Christian, what are you seeing in terms of student access when they're at home? What challenges does that present?
Well, that's the greatest challenge that we have, is the access from home, because in some areas we don't even, you know, some parents don't even have cell phone capability because of the rural nature of our district. So, you know, we do have a real challenge with that. We do have a number of entities, though, that are working together to try to solve that. We have a telephone cooperative in the area that's gotten a number of grants to increase some coverage and some Wi-Fi capability. So we're hoping that those resources are going to continue to expand.
Excellent, excellent. Well, and we'll speak a little bit more about the importance of home internet access in just a bit. So let's talk now. Is Shannon? Are you available? Okay, so I don't think that Shannon is able to join us. So let's talk a little bit about the digital divide. Now, when available, high-speed broadband coupled with digital tools and excellent teaching shows tremendous potential to improve educational outcomes for all kids, particularly those who've been traditionally underserved. Where reliable internet connections are not available, the Alliance is particularly worried that students who have been traditionally underserved risk falling further behind. So the question is, how can we make sure that all students have access to technology so that, regardless of their background, all students can benefit? So I'll turn to the panel first for some thoughts on this. How can we make sure that all kids can have access to the internet?
Well, from my standpoint, I think it's pretty simple that we just need to make sure we provide it to everyone. I believe that that the internet right now is as vital as having running water in your home. So as everyone has it, we should all, that's the only way to level the playing field is by making sure that everyone does have access.
And thoughts from our superintendent from South Carolina?
No doubt. Not only is it the internet access, but we've also got to make sure that they have an appropriate device to use. Too many times people consider connectivity just a smartphone, but that's not always the right device to do homework and to do lessons away from school. So it's a two-pronged issue. One is the connectivity, and I agree that if we don't find a way to provide the connectivity, then all we're doing is contributing to the divide between the haves and the have-nots.
Mm-hmm. We definitely agree. In fact, Christian, can you tell us our audience the story that you were describing? How some students were saying that they have internet access, but actually what they have is a cell phone.
Yes, quite similar to what the superintendent just spoke of, where students will say they have internet access, and so I attempt to send them some work to do outside, maybe a project that I was giving students to complete outside of class. And I found out through meeting with their parent that the technology that they were talking about was their cell phone. And the cell phone, while being a wonderful tool, is just not going to meet the mark in allowing them to be able to have full access and to complete tasks like PowerPoint projects and research-based projects and science STEM fair projects. They're just not able to actually properly complete those tasks using just only their cell phone.
Got it. Now, one effort that's really been working to close these digital gaps in school and at home has been undertaken by the Federal Communications Commission in recent years. And we want to tell you a little bit more about these programs and how you can access the funding that they provide to improve connections in your schools, libraries, and in your communities. The first program is formally called the Universal Service Schools and Libraries Program. It's more commonly known as E-Rate. E-Rate is the federal government's largest education technology program, and it provides funding to schools and libraries to help offset part of the cost of internet access. Schools and districts with greater concentrations of low-income students receive more support. In 2014, E-Rate was expanded by $1.5 billion annually so that 99% of students would have access to high-speed broadband in their schools and in their libraries. This expansion, we feel, is one of the most important improvements in education in many years. Dr. Goodwin, I want to turn to you here. So you mentioned E-Rate, too. It sounds like you have actually quite a bit of experience in accessing E-Rate funds. Can you give us a high-level picture of what's involved in accessing funds from E-Rate?
Well, one of the first things that you've got to do is have a real good needs assessment so that you understand what you need to do and what you need to apply for the funds, you know, to help you with. And the main part of that, obviously, is connectivity and increasing that access. With that, I will say that we do use an outside E-Rate 2 consultant because it is rather cumbersome to make the application. But we find that that small fee is certainly worth, you know, the work to make sure that we were able to secure the funds. Also along with that is being able to make sure that you have your local match. And we were very fortunate that our school board bought in very quickly to the opportunities that those funds provided to us, and we were able to pass a small bond issuance to do the match, and that's been very helpful for us.
And I think that's a really important point. I mean, E-Rate provides a discount for internet access. It's not always going to be free. The amount that the school or the district or the library pays goes down based on the percentage of low-income students that are present. But it's really a public-private partnership where the school puts some in, as well as funding from the federal government. So for superintendents who are interested in pursuing E-Rate funds, or librarians or teachers who want to learn more about the program and how you can become an advocate for it, you can get some information about E-Rate at universalservice.org. Now, another program that's focused on connectivity is called Lifeline. This program helps low-income families get reduced monthly telephone service and was expanded by the FCC last year to give low-income users the opportunity to use their subsidy for home internet access. The idea was to really address the issues that we've been discussing today about how you might have internet access at home or in the classroom, but not so much at home. So while this change didn't single-handedly eliminate the digital divide, it does offer opportunities for more low-income students to access the internet at home and address what many of us call this homework gap. Hmm. So, and this is really important from an equity perspective because mm-hmm. we know that there are about 5 million families with school-aged children that have no high-speed internet at home. And unfortunately, those students, those families are more likely to be students of color and, again, in low income. So this is something that's very serious that we need to address. And unfortunately, within the first few weeks of new leadership at the Federal Communications Commission, we've seen some signs that they may be rethinking their policy on expanding internet access. Ajit Pai, who's the newly appointed FCC chairman, recently withdrew a public report that demonstrated the progress that schools and libraries were making on expanding internet access through E-Rate. And the new chair also revoked the participation of each provider in the Lifeline program that was designated specifically to provide subsidized internet access for homes, severely undercutting the FCC's ability to close the homework gap for these 5 million households that I mentioned with school-aged children that don't have high-speed internet at home. I mean, needless to say, this is a major problem that makes it all the more difficult to close achievement gaps because low-income households, especially students, households of color and low-income households, are less likely to have access to technology than their more affluent peers. So as we celebrate Digital Learning Day, it's really important that we tell the story of how technology and broadband access is transforming education for students across the country. And as the FCC and the new administration move forward, it's vital that we let all of our representatives and our senators know how important internet access is to the success of all of our children. The Alliance will certainly continue to fight for and to monitor developments concerning E-Rate and Lifeline and other initiatives that can help close the digital divide and reduce the homework gap. You can stay tuned to our updates over the next several weeks and months as the story and others continue to develop. So I want to turn to some questions that we've received from our audience that get to these issues. So going back to how technology is really addressing some of the issues in our classrooms, we want to also make sure that technology doesn't replace good teaching. It enhances good That's teaching. Right. In fact, technology can't replace teaching. Mm-hmm. So one teacher from a viewer in Colorado has asked, how do you help teachers break the habit of only using technology for tests?
Wow, that's a very good question. One of the waves, as was mentioned by our superintendent that just spoke, is that testing now has become digital. The online, all the assessments are online. So we do have to get students ready to be able to answer questions using the device and making sure that they don't just click and push buttons, but they actually are still working things out on paper so that when they have their thought together, they can respond correctly on the device. So what you have to really do is take time to reteach students how to use paper and pencil in order to develop their ideas, and then also teach them how to transfer those ideas from the paper onto the device. And that's a good way to enhance the learning and not let the device take over for the learning. Because again, as I mentioned earlier, if you do that, students will take advantage of that piece and become kind of lulled into pushing and you know, it's a gadget. So they get into playing with the different pieces of the gadget if you're not instructing them on how to use it properly. So some, you have to make sure in your planning that some of the work is done where it is necessary on the device, like your research, but then also make sure your students know how to document their information in a notebook, on a piece of paper with a pencil, how to get their thoughts down that way too. You have to balance it out.
And speaking of balancing, tell us about how you make sure that the use of technology, as we were talking about earlier, is really important for personalizing instruction. How do you make sure that you maintain the strong relationship with the student while you're using technology, and that the technology doesn't replace the important relationship between teachers and educators?
Well, as all good educators know, and really, to me, most things in life are about building relationships. So you have to build, when I've been successful with students because I've managed to always make it my priority to build a relationship with each student first, before we get into what I'm here to teach you and what I want you to learn and why I want you to be successful. I first want to know about you and what you are about. And then from there, I can build upon that relationship, and then I'm able to transfer anything that I want them to learn, whether it be through the technology, whether it be through a book that we're reading. The bottom line is I have to know you first. I have to know that you are into books that are about sports. So I can start giving you books, whether I give you online digital books or physical books in front of you. I need to know what you like. Also, I make sure that I sit down with as many parents and the student together, because I want the student to know that your parent and I, we're on the same team. We're on your team. We're all about your success. We're working together. And I make it very clear to all students that their parents are their first teacher. So whatever they say, I'm going to reiterate it. I am their mouthpiece. I'm there to support what they want for you. So that is how we merge that relationship. And then I am that teacher that may occasionally stop by your house just to talk to your parents or just to talk to you, just to see how everyone's doing. And it bodes well for how well my students work for me, because of the fact that they know that I'm not just here to shove a device in front of them and say, get to work. They know that I care about them as a person.
Excellent, excellent. We have a question, not from South Carolina, but North Carolina. Dr. Goodman, I'm going to throw this question to you and ask you to elaborate on some of the previous conversation. The question is, how do you implement a digital world in a truly rural community school where there's no wireless and less than half of the students have internet access at home or even computers or smartphones?
Well, while we've talked a lot about home and the importance of getting the access at home, the first thing that we've got to do is have the access at the schools. And we've got to take advantage of the things that are out there that can help us get that connectivity and to put it in place. You know, it's been my experience that there are a number of ways to get that internet access to a school. And, you know, it's one that our local folks have to work on to make a way to solve the problem. I've got to think that virtually, not 100%, but virtually all of our schools, there is a capability of getting it there. It's how do you get the funding to put it in place?
Well, and really, that's what the E-Rate program is all about. Tell us, how long did it take you to go from start to finish, so to speak, from when you started accessing E-Rate funds to where you are now to provide internet access in your school?
Overall, to get from when we started to where we are now, pretty much wrapping up the projects, has been a two-year journey. We made application, and for whatever reason, we had expected the funding to be approved a few months earlier, maybe even 3 months earlier than it was. So there was a delay there. Of course, then, you know, once the money was approved and then getting that flow going, as well as actually, you know, getting our contractors on site, it's been quite a journey that's lasted the better part of 2 years.
Excellent. And one of the things that you mentioned participating in Future Ready Schools, the initiative of the Alliance for Excellent Education. And one of our sort of mantras with Future Ready Schools is that it's important to plan before you purchase. Can you talk about some of the planning that you've done and that you've continued to do so that you're using the technology effectively and it's not just one more thing that's being thrown to teachers to deal with in the classroom?
Well, and that's so true. When you're looking at this, basically what we have is a technology strategic plan, for lack of a better term, where we're trying to plan not only for the here and now, but how we can evolve into the future. And you've got to have that in place, because if not, you're always spinning your wheels. I certainly agree with y'all's earlier conversation about teaching. Technology is not just something else we add. It's just one more tool that we have available to us, and mastering the use of that tool is what we're trying to do. And we also want that tool not to get in the way of good instruction. We just want it to enhance instruction.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. Well, no, thank you very much. So I'd like to close just by thanking our wonderful panel today for their thoughts and helping us all have a better understanding of how technology and broadband can better connect our students to success. As a reminder, this webinar is being recorded and it'll be available for on-demand viewing at allfored.org/webinars. Thank you for tuning in today and for participating in Digital Learning Day 2017 and for working every day to improve the lives of children across the nation. We look forward to seeing you again next year for Digital Learning Day 2018. Have a great day.